and welcome to another episode of Fool's Daily. I'm still joined by Conrad.
I'm here still. I don't sound bored, really. I'm really interested.
And I'm still joined by Carl.
Hello.
Who is very interested.
Excited.
And interesting as well.
Well, yeah. So what was going to be one show has now turned into three shows. But today we are going to talk about what the future of open combat is. I'll sort of touched on it in various other things, but today we're getting to it.
Before we go there, how successful has the launch been? I mean, you see, the enthusiasm and sort of what you said in the last couple of episodes has been that it's been really good, but has it, you know, exceeded your expectations?
Yeah.
Were you surprised by the sales and things like that? Or
it's a tricky one, actually. It's one of those ones where how to measure it is I had no idea how big the digital market would be. So a digital, you know, PDF product market would be, or how big the online sort of community would be. And I think at the moment I've only scratched the surface, but the response was good and very positive. You know, the number of sales that I've had in that first month made me think, well, actually, this is me just scratching the surface of exposure, because I haven't really gone all out on exposure. And the response I've had from that, and particularly the response from people saying, really interested, need to know more information, there was a lot of that as well. So it made me think, well, this is just scratching the surface, and it appears to be that there's a big interest there for this kind of game and for open combat, you know, open universal approach. So I'm really pleased with the way it's gone, and it's certainly given me that boost of confidence, because whenever you produce something, you never know. You know, you just don't. It's not like, I mean, I touched on it previously, that when you run a Kickstarter, you can see how many backers you've got. You know, these people kind of dropping in. You've got a very visual reference of who's going to back it there and then. And in this sense, when you release it digitally, the response you get is you can't tell until the sales come in. But after that first month of the exposure that I got it, the sales that I got from that made me think, well, actually, there is a market here. There's a good size market. And this is just purely the digital one.
Yeah.
That this is exposure through the limited exposure that I've created through Twitter and Gav blogging. And I think Beasts of War picked up on it through Gav's blog. And this is without me producing any video support or even trying to go through, you know, raising awareness on Facebook and all those other social media outlets.
Yeah.
So I think going forward, I'm expecting it to sort of grow and grow basically over the next few months. And say I mentioned about talking to Henry at Miniature War Games previously. I'm also talking to War Games Illustrated and I think what's his name now? I want to say Jasper, but it's not Jasper. I've been taking it. Guy over at War Games Soldier and Strategy. He's been talking to me as well. So I think in the new year, those magazines may be saying something about it. So that will reach a totally different group of people, because I don't think the people that are online are a particular section of wargaming community. Not all of us go online. You know, it's not everyone uses Facebook. Not everybody uses Twitter. You know, we're only just minute little subsections of the markets, you know. So I imagine the exposure in the magazines will again increase it and get another wave. So getting to what we're going to talk about expansions, that's something that I'm planning in to support the rollout, if you like, and the increased exposure that it's going to get, because it's certainly got legs, basically. It's one of those things. It's got legs, which hopefully my approach of organically growing the business should see the revenue to allow that to happen. That's the plan anyway. So we'll see over the next few months.
have you started work on expansions, or you already had in mind? Or
well, I have actually. I mean, the thing with whenever you create something, whenever you write something, you remove things and remove things till you can't remove anything more. So the core system is as clean and as accessible as I could make it. So it allowed it can be used for as wide a range of games and themes and settings, periods, whatever. What the role for expansions is going to be to add extra details or wrinkles or flavors to allow people who want to play in a particular historical period or want to play with Magic or want to play with whatever, it allows them to bolt those on. It's a very modular approach, so that the core system is down, it's ready, people can get that. The expansions will add the little elements that allow you to sort of create the flavors of games that you like. So I mean, Magic is something that people asked for, because I think a lot of the people who immediately downloaded it, or the early downloaders, a lot of them are fantasy gamers. And a Magic system, we have got one at the moment, and built in within the core system, there's the psychological attacks, which are essentially a series of abilities that are within the core system, which could be magical, or they could be guys yelling at each other. It's up to your own interpretation. So there is something within the core system that allows you to do that. But to move it into a fantasy, much more kind of expected fantasy approach to Magic, that's going to be an expansion, but it won't be till next year, that one. We've still got quite a bit of work to do on that. And there are variations of that as well. I mean, Gav's working on undead and demonology kind of type bits and bobs. I'm sort of, you know, the
evil necromancers.
Yeah, he's got some quite cool little things, actually. It's quite funny. we've still got quite a bit of work to do on them, but they're things that popped up. A lot of the expansions exist in sort of bit form from part of the development. Over the 3-4 years that I've kind of been jumping in and out of it, there were things that weren't appropriate to put in the core system because of the universal nature of it. So we've pulled them out, but then what we need to do now is flesh them out and work out exactly what we put in an expansion. I mean, the first expansion, I can say what the first expansion is, because that's actually one that's got more universal appeal. It's tentatively titled Swordsman, but I'm not sure whether that's going to stay the name. But essentially what it does is it introduces a new sets of abilities for people with swords. And what I was trying to illustrate with it was that those ideas of those swashbuckling type swordsmen, or the guys that could really maneuver people around. So I don't know if you know the Princess Bride film with Carrie Elwes. You know, it's like, I see you're using the Agrippa.
Might have watched it once.
Yeah, that whole Inigo Montoya thing, that kind of the duel that those two have, that kind of moving around and doing things to each other and taking the sword off each other and all that kind of cool stuff. That's what the kind of, in my mind, that's the kind of driving force for the skills that I'm putting in to that expansion. And there'll be a series of skills and a scenario within the micro expansion. And they are going to be little micro expansions. So that will be the first one that allows people to creates a different dynamic within the game as well. It's like, you don't have to have them, but if you have got them, you can create those kind of cool little characters or create cool little circumstances where you can start to maneuver people around or take the sword off of them, or, you know, all that kind of cool stuff. So that's going to be the first one. The other ones later, I mean, you mentioned, I know when you covered Open Combat in an earlier podcast a little while ago, you mentioned about campaign systems and the fact that you could do it yourself.
Please, you mentioned
about those. Now, the funny thing about campaign systems, I mean, something that myself and Gav kind of jumps up and down about it quite a lot, is that advancement system, so being able to advance your models and give them experience or whatever term you use, that is not necessarily a campaign system. That is an advancement system, and then the campaign system is what you're actually doing. So it's splitting those out so that if you want, because somebody playing with their Celts and their Romans in ancient Britain is going to have a very different opinion as to what a campaign is versus somebody who's playing with dwarves versus goblins in a mountain or something. So
very, very true. So in your mind, a campaign system is a linked set of scenarios.
Yeah, like Dead Man's Hand type thing.
Well, it's kind of there's a few routes that we're looking at. And again, it's that bolting on module so that you could. I think one thing that will stand alone will be the advancement system. So from a purely from an organized play point of view, if there's a group of guys that wanted to play a league, for instance, then an advancement system would be an easy way to do that as well, because it allows you to kind of have your guys gaining experience and getting better as the league progresses.
Or worse,
yeah.
That's one of the things I think that, I mean, has always appealed to me about advancement systems is that if something goes horrendously wrong and you have a terrible day with the dice, then your warriors do end up, God damn it, I pulled my hamstring
again. I mean, that's one thing that I have, one thing that we have got in place is guys getting wounded and not turning up. You know, it's important because it kind of gives it that character. Because a lot of people like to have total control over what they've got to use, but that's not what happens in sort of I'm going to use the term reality, but it's I mean, we're talking about fantasy gaming in a sense, but whether it's historical or fantasy gaming, the reality of the situations very often was if guys have been fighting or on a series of combats, then they're going to get a bit wounded, and some of them are not going to be able to be at full fighting strength or turn up in particular engagements. So that is going to be part of it, is guys, if they pick up too many wounds or whatever, they might have to sit out for a little while they're, you know, putting the leg up, whatever it is.
Looking after the kids.
Or whatever it is, you know. But the campaigns, going on to campaigns, there are multiple routes that we can take through campaigns. And some there are different approaches. So in a fantasy sense, you could have a campaign which is based on wealth. You know, essentially your adventurers that are trying to build up personal wealth or wealth on yourself, and the aim of the campaign is to gain that wealth and gain that kudos within the environment. There might be a campaign system which is to do with territory, an expanding territory, so you're building up your own barony or whatever it is. You know, you're building up your own personal empire, and each of those territories that you're capturing will have a benefit to whoever owns it at the time, and you can take territories off each other. So that would be very different to someone else who wants to have that series of linked scenarios that you touched on, the idea that series of linked scenarios, that would be a campaign that is very narrative, has a very, very specific start and end. And that's a different approach to the other two. So there are, from a modular, the modular approach that we're going to take to expansions for open combat means that we can produce an advancement system, which will to a large degree be consistent for all of whatever campaign you choose to play. We may put wrinkles within each campaign to add more flavor that's specific to that campaign. So, you know, you're used to the advancement system, but here's these few wrinkles that you can put in that would give you more character to the campaign that you're playing. So that there are several approaches that we can take to it. But again, it's something that's much further into next year that those are likely to be released. Mainly because to start off with, it's going to be the swordsman to sort of give people that kind of character that of the kind of cool, skilled swords guys that are used to doing, coming out with witty one-liners and all that kind of stuff. And a scenario within that will be the first one. Then the next one's likely to be a scenario pack, which adds more scenarios that people can play and adjustments to scenarios. Following that, it starts to head into territory, which is we haven't really nailed down which is going to come first. So there are, you know, there's exploring the monsters aspect, there's exploring cavalry. There is the advancement system, which I think may well come in third as the third one, just because I think there's a real hunger for it.
How many do you want to do in, like, in 2015? I mean, are you thinking one a month, one every quarter?
Yeah, ideally, it will be one a month, but it does depend on time. The production. It's funny. The writing's actually it's reasonably quick in a sense. The writing and the producing of the actual written content is quite a small proportion of the job of producing it. The actual production, so not, you know, the design, the layout, the photography, the painting, the scenery, all of the support material that normally within a large studio you would have specialists, you'd have your miniature painters, your terrain builders.
Yep.
You know, that for myself at the moment, I don't have the budget to hire in those guys. And ideally, I'd love Second Thunder to get to the point where I can swing into it full time, and it has the income and the revenue there to allow me to build the business properly with a full studio. Ideally, that is the long term aim. But in the meantime, as the business grows organically, I'm juggling an awful lot of plates to get it moving along. So the current open combat, that is everything there was done by me. I think except for a couple of the Mantic Orcs, which are from a friend, Nick's collection, and a few bits of terrain from his collection. shouldn't. Gav pretty much was the consultative approach with it during development, and also the guy that sort of slapped me around with my kind of writing sometimes when it was getting a little bit verbose or whatever. So it's pretty much the illustrations, the photography, the painting. I've produced all of that, which is why it took so long to get to fruition. However, with the micro expansions, there's not the same weight of content required. So I should be able to bring those out on a monthly basis.
What are they going to be at a cost, Carl? Are they going to be separate PDFs?
I'm still working on that. They're going to be separate PDFs, and there will be a cost to it. They're not going to be the same price as the core book, but we're looking at a much lower price because they are essentially micro expansions. So I've got to weigh up the odds because obviously at the moment I'm using PayPal for the payment system. So,
is there any way consolidating those into the main rule book so you end up with one PDF, or is that something that you that technically potentially can't be done because obviously once you've got that...
It's that modular nature. That's the thing. Anything that I slide into the main rule book, you're starting to reduce the universal appeal of it, if you like, or the universal approach that I've taken for it. It's each expansion should really add something that isn't necessary for the core game to run. It should add extra flavor for people who want it, it's like,
I see what you're saying.
That's the approach for it. It's to allow people that pick and mix thing. It's like if I bought a couple of dueling kind of swordsman type models, and the swordsman one would be perfect for them. If I bought or if I fancied getting, or I've got some trolls that I've not painted yet, then I might buy the troll expansion, which is one that's currently kicking about in the heading towards finished state.
Monstrous beasts.
And the monsters, if you like, that, I mean, just touching on that now, I mentioned it, that there'll be kind of core mechanical aspect of them that would be consistent, but then you would put the flavour on them that is relevant to whatever you're doing. So, a troll will have a particular element to it. A minotaur will behave in a particular way. There are different behaviours and flavours that you can put in because these are, you're layering on things. That the game itself is pretty robust. It doesn't fall over when you layer things on, but you don't need all of them. So, if you want to run with a Minotaur, then you can get the Minotaur expansion. I mean, that's a long way off, but it's just the approach that we're taking. It's the approach we're taking. So it should, we can support it then in the long term. The ultimate aim, from my perspective, is to get to the point where I can do a printed edition. And in the printed edition, that's about... what I would do with the printed edition is I would address the sort of need for some sort of universal system that people can use for playing campaigns if they want to do their own thing. So it would have to be something universal. But even when doing a physical product, at that point, I would be looking to do supporting physical modules, a bit like the old school way of doing D&D campaigns back then, back in the day, where you'd have your core rule set, and then you could buy this thing here, which would give you XYZ scenarios to play in, and also these other little cool little things that you'd enjoy, and then you don't need them, but they're loads of fun if you do want them.
That sounds like an excellent idea, Carl.
That's the long term plan, but again, it's taking it step by step, and a lot of it's going to be to do with how much revenue it generates. To that kind of almost, that's the fuel that's going to power the engine. So it's the
isn't it always the way?
I mean, I'd love to say, right, I'm full time throwing myself into it, but at the moment, financially, I just can't do that yet. And as much as the lure of Kickstarter gives people that instant cash, as I said previously, it's that I don't want to give myself that weight of responsibility when I have so many other responsibilities as well. It's that kind of, it's a double-edged sword, I think, Kickstarter. And I think a lot of companies, when they have successful ones, they then feel the weight of that responsibility as they're carrying it for the next however many months.
I mentioned to a friend that I was going to be talking to you today, and his first question was, I don't play fantasy games. What about a science fiction version? And I said, I will ask.
Well, a science fiction variant, if you like, I have got the bare bones of a science fiction, a universal science fiction game. it's not a straight kind of porting out of the mechanics of open combat. And that is primarily because open combat is close-up engagements. It's guys that see each other eye-to-eye, whacking each other with swords and sticks. You know, it's real close-up stuff. And the mechanics are built around on that basis. I mean, the missile weapons, you know, there are, you know, can use missile weapons, bows, crossbows, whatever. But mechanically, the engagements and the encounters in open combat are close. Science fiction is slightly different because it's where you place it. I mean, in the near future or whatever, again, a universal system, you're going to be most likely playing on a wider area, a larger area. This open combat plays within a 2x2. Happily plays within a 2x2. I've played it on a larger area, but I prefer 2x2 because it's quick, it's easy to set up, and it's easy to stall. And it gives you that quick fix, because again, open combat plays very quickly. You know, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, you're done, and you can play again. Which, obviously, from a point of view of campaigns, makes it great, because on a club night, you can play two or three campaign games. So you could arguably complete a campaign within a month if you do regular weekly meetings. So you get that really good buzz of quick experience and fun. And it doesn't. Some campaigns die out because they take so long, and people don't turn up. And you know, it's that. Whereas open combat allows the campaigns to be played rather rapidly, and then you know you all have a rest and play something else, and then you can come back to it afresh with a new one, and it still plays quite quickly. But yeah, science fiction. I'm applying the universal nature to it, but it's not for some time. So it's not going to be next year. It won't be next year. I am a massive science fiction fan. If somebody had asked me before I produced Open Combat whether I was a science fiction or a fantasy gamer, I would have said science fiction. But Open Combat, because as I've got older, actually, I've got more interested in historical games as well. So the Open Combat was my kind of way of playing the historical games and fantasy games and getting those quick fantasy and historical fixes that I want and creating the characters and the narratives within the game that I played that gave me that little anecdote and buzz that, you know, amongst friends, we can talk about them, you know, those amusing moments. So the science fiction game at the moment is still, it's on the shelf, essentially. It's not moving along at the moment, but things that happen during the development of open combat will naturally feed into what we do with the science fiction one. It's going to be a lot of fun because I've got a very, you know, I know I'm going to take it. And, you know, back when I was at GW, I used to, you know, the last game that they were developing, in fact, before I left was Necromunda. So it's a lot of fun playing that. So it's that kind of environment. It's that kind of game where you're playing with small teams that I do like, you know.
Cool. Well, I think that's it. I think we have sucked Carl dry.
Yeah. Open combat. It's brilliant. Get it.
I would tend to agree with that. And you can tell he works in marketing because he's been very good at getting the name in.
Very subtly, though, as well.
Yeah.
Very, very subtly. It's not like bendyboards.co.uk and they just blast it out every time.
It's funny you should say bendyboards. I keep thinking, like, you do 2x2 boards, don't you? That might be quite useful.
Yes, we do. And you know what? For you, I would even do you a special deal.
Oh. I'll have to sell a few copies first before I can.
Yes, so go buy. Where can they get it, Carl?
Where can they get it? They can get it at secondthunder.com. That's secondthunder, all one word, .com. And when you buy it, you just create an account and you can download it instantly. You get a download link and you can just download it straight away.
Smash in.
And we've got a forum, so you can get that to that from the site. Also on Facebook, it's facebook.com/secondthunder, all one word. Pop on there, build up the likes and things, because I'm going to start generating content to put through Facebook for that anybody uses that. And then on Twitter, is it second_thunder? I think it is. People can find me.
you forgot the cost, Carl.
It is second under.
The cost of the game is a tenner, just a tenner.
There you go.
£10.
Yep.
That's it.
And you can
to support British gaming industry,
yep,
new gaming industry, and get yourself a really nice little set of rules.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, and you can use whatever figures you like. You know, it's supporting any figure company. Your favourite figure company, you can buy the figures and you play open combat.
Yeah. Very good. Right. Thank you very much, Carl.
No, thank you very much.
Yeah. This has been excellent.
Thank you for bearing with my waffling.
No, it's been a pleasure, mate. So
yeah, we'll get we and when you launch some mini expansions, come on again and talk about them.
Yeah, we'll do. Yeah, that'd be cool.
So, for the last time with Carl, I've been Mike.
I'm quite emotional now, but I have been Conrad.
And I'm Carl.
And that's second_thunder on Twitter and secondthunder.com.
Yeah, open combat. Right.
Well, I think we're good now. Bye.
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 You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter, we're at Fools_Daily, or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.